Enhancing Humans for a Future in Space. This panel was recorded at SWECON 2021, Fantastica, in Stockholm, Sweden. The participants are Sara at Book of Doom, Ian Sales, Adrian Tchaikovsky, Toril Kornfelt, and it was moderated by Eva Holmqvist.
SWECON poddar, en poddradio från svenska science fiction och fantasykongresser.
Hi everybody. Welcome to this panel that we are going to talk about enhancing humans for space. Space is a dangerous place, so humans are not exactly suited to travel between the stars or even be on an alien planet. So that's what we are going to discuss today. My name is Eva Holmqvist, and I'm a writer of science fiction and fantasy. And Sarah?
Yeah, Sarah Strid. I have the Books of Doom moniker for the program, which is my Instagram. And my background is for the panel is a bit of a wild card. I'm not a writer, but I have a PhD in medicine, so I might bring some of the medical stuff, maybe.
Hi, I'm Toril Kornfelt. I am a biologist by training, and now I'm a science journalist. And I just recently wrote a book about the genetic editing of humans and what that will change in our bodies and in future society. That's actually just been translated to English as well. So any English speakers, it'll be available for you too. So I think that's why I'm in this panel.
My name's Ian Sales, and I wrote the Apollo Quartet, which is about the Apollo program, and it occurred to me a few days ago that next year is the 10th anniversary of the first book coming out.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Hello, I'm Adrian Tchaikovsky. I'm a science fiction writer with a lot of interest in bioengineering in various forms. Specifically, in my recent book, Bearhead, I include human beings who have been bioengineered to better withstand extreme conditions on Mars.
Mm. Interesting. I think it's wise to start at the beginning, as always, and discuss, is it necessary to enhance humans for space, or should we just have a technology instead? Do we have to enhance ourselves? What do you say?
Yes, unless you want them to die.
I mean, if you're dealing with genetic modification, i.e. inheritable modification, there's an obvious advantage if you're looking at long-term space colonization, because technology requires constant maintenance, whereas biological systems effectively maintain themselves and renew themselves and produce people who share those advantages. And although the idea of terraforming a planet to an Earth-like state is a lovely long-term dream, in the short term, it seems to me it's much easier to alien form humans.
Mm. And it's also. I think one of the really interesting ways of using it would be to use it in tandem with technology, with terraforming, and sort of do like the easiest path for all of them. So terraforming would be a lot easier if humans could withstand slightly different conditions. Technology could work a lot better if humans were slightly adapted to other things as well. And so I don't really think there might be a conflict, but I think there might be an enhancement of all of these areas compared to each other.
I mean, if I can give an example. So in Bearhead, the setup I've got, the people that are being engineered for Mars cannot just walk about without a spacesuit on the Martian surface. What they can do is they've started their terraforming procedure in a crater. The crater is kind of canopied over, and they've started to produce atmosphere that is slowly leaching out into the rest of the planet. But in the slightly more hospitable conditions of the crater, they can work unassisted. So, like you say, that it is exactly the partnership you're describing.
Yeah, and for short term, we probably would be okay. But for any significant amount of time, like years, and maybe generations, we would need to change somehow. And another planet would not have the same proteins, reasonably, as ours, we'd think, at least. So if we're going to have food on that planet without changing it totally, yeah, we'd need to do something.
But then you start drifting into eugenics, and things get very, very nasty.
Yeah. But I think it's to some extent, and not really, well, looking at sort of eugenics, I think part of that is it's going to be a really interesting, the sort of social aspects are going to be really interesting as well, of how do you create humans that are consuming resources in the way that you want them to in future. I know this has been going on Earth, a really interesting philosophical discussion of... it turns out that it would be theoretically quite easy to make people allergic to meat. So there's a known mutation, it gives people a severe allergy to meat. It would be inheritable, it would be a fairly easy fix, and it would be a nice way to solve a lot of environmental problems.
So, weirdly enough, I've got a book coming out which utilizes this exact idea. But one of the... So, eugenics might be a problem in the sense of, obviously, if we have a two-tier genetic sort of adaptation of humans so that the people with money, for example, can make their children into superhuman children who have all these advantages and disease resistance and so forth, that's one end of the problem. With the direction my writing has gone, I've generally been looking at the other end of the problem, because these people that we adapt to live and work in space will not be the people who get to reap the reward of the colonies they build. In the same way as you can absolutely bet that if there was a genetic modification to make people allergic to meat, so they had to they became sort of obligate vegetarians, the people that would be pushed on would not be the people at the top. And that, I think, is the big social thing. It's not so much using genetic modification to make superhumans, it's using genetic modification enforcedly at people who don't necessarily have the choice about it to make them into more useful workers. Or less resource hungry, a less resource hungry population, because you can bet that the people right at the top will keep all that good stuff that they are denying everyone else.
And you could bet that there would be a black market for changing back, right?
If it's possible. Otherwise, you can see that you are changed to live in space, and then you change your mind and want to move back, and you can't.
But then, not all these genetic changes may actually take place. Take effect on some people. So you create a new class of people who do not have those advantages, and you back with the disabled argument.
Yeah. One question, though. If this is possible, how fast is the change? Can we actually do it to our children, or is it going to take several generations?
I would say, so having a look into this a bit, it depends on what kind of change you want to do. So the first genetically edited babies have already been born. So far, we only know of two of them, and there was a bit of a scandal involving them, but they are born. So theoretically, like the first, if we're talking about single gene changes that have very specific effects, then it's already possible, and you would have children growing up having these enhancements or changes already. You could have that within a if you want workers, so then it may be a 20 year span from being born. If you want bigger changes, a sort of additive changes or several genetic changes, then you're going to have to wait for a longer time basically because it's at least slightly harder to do a lot of genetic changes at the same time. It's possible, but you're going to have a lot more risks.
Yeah. But if you're going to change anyone that's more suited to live on a specific planet, is one change really enough?
No. It depends on the planet.
I mean, yes, I mean, if the planet's that Earth-like, you could probably just get by at that point. I mean, it's one of the other things, the idea of different proteins, the idea of encountering an alien biosphere that we just don't get on with biologically is fascinating. So, I have a play around with that with the Expert Systems Brother, and the idea that we might have to modify people to fit that ecosystem, and it has pluses and minuses because it means you can eat. You can say, you can eat the stuff that grows there. It means that it can eat you.
Yeah.
Or that you can catch its diseases, things like that. Because there are definite pluses and minuses to not actually interacting with an ecosystem on its own terms. Which is not the question you were asking, and I've gone off on a tangent, so I apologize for that.
Yeah, that's all right. In Becker Chambers, to be taught in four... If fortunate, you have a crew of explorers that go from one planet to another. And before they arrive to each planet, they are changed to better be able to handle that environment. So it's about a couple of months between each planet in the travel time between that they are changed. Is that really possible?
Well, in theory, depends on the changes. But you couldn't do anything permanent in that. Like maybe if you change your stem cells.
Maybe if you solve like the regeneration problem, like plants can regenerate, right, from a small part. If we could do that, like I don't know, like a salamander, but way better, then maybe we could use that and grow new organs or whatever, and maybe then we could take them out or whatever, change back. But I think so. Maybe it could be done, but wouldn't it be a huge psychological trauma to change all the time like that?
I suppose you could edit out the part of the brain that found it traumatic.
Yeah, exactly.
But it also kind of got, like the thing I thought about when I haven't read the book because I think they sound really interesting, but I haven't read them yet. Was it sounds a bit like taking just sort of harking onto that protein discussion. It sort of sounds like the medicine you take if you're lactose intolerant. Like, in theory, it doesn't really make a genetic change. It gives you enzymes without your own cells.
Yeah.
But it's almost like that, like taking a medicine to make you live in that. And then, of course, you don't have to do the permanent changes because you would just, have the enzymes anyway. You'll get the enzymes some other way.
But if they're just visiting these planets temporarily, wouldn't a technological solution be better? Mm-hmm. I mean, why go to all the trouble of changing them when all they've got to do is put on a spacesuit?
That's a very good question.
Obviously not answered in the book.
She has chosen this method, and it intrigued me when I read the book, because it seems like a very strange way of handling the problem.
It makes a lot more sense if you're going to make a colony. Yeah. Like if you want people to actually live there. Then you could also spend like the 20 years of having breeding and sort of getting the people so that you can get those genome-wide changes as well.
It reminds me of a book, Semiosis, by Sue Burke. Well, are you going to mention that?
No, but it's a great book.
So there's a colony on another planet, and they ended up in a symbiotic relationship with a giant plant which occupies the entire surface. Mm. And they farm the plant in order to make their life easier, and the plant, in turn, husbands them to make its life easier.
Yeah, that's quite intriguing.
Yeah, and you mentioned reproduction, right? And that will be a problem, probably. If we change ourselves, will it be inheritable, like you mentioned also? And also, if gravity and things are different, maybe it will be hard to reproduce. It is hard, they've found, in mice in space. They do not develop normally. So that will be another problem, probably, both in space and on other planets.
I guess you can't really keep your children in a centrifuge until they're 18.
No,
maybe.
I don't think the children would like that.
Keep the mother in a centrifuge.
But I think that touches on a really interesting point, that it's easy to think that it's the genetic editing mm-hmm. that's going to be the tricky part when you think about these things. That's going to be some actually editing the genes is going to be the tricky part. But that's most likely not going to be the tricky part. The tricky part is going to be things like, okay, does reproduction even work here? Mm-hmm. How do we solve, you know, all of those other sort of bigger biological issues, those things we tend to don't think about because we don't really think about them as technology, and so we tend to sort of ignore them. But the gene editing, from what science looks like now, gene editing is the easy part. Everything that happens after that, everything that happens with our bodies after that, that's the tricky part.
Including new diseases, probably.
Yeah.
And new problems from those edits. And doing surgery on new, I don't know, organs. Who knows?
Yeah, just fitting the organs in.
Yeah, and we're actually very adapted to Earth in all aspects. So just the change in gravity, I think, may have larger issues than we may think.
And gravity is the one thing you cannot terraform.
No, you can't.
Perhaps they should do it in stages. The same way that humanity did as it migrated out from the Great Rift. And they adapted to each of their environments as they moved into it, rather than imagining that, you know, just stick a couple of cells in a test tube and then we've got a Martian colonist. It'll be done in stages, first technology, and then there will be some adaptation that will happen naturally, and then some that can be accelerated through a genetic engineering.
Yeah. Will we create a new species? What do you think?
Well, I mean, there are some horrific possibilities. I mean, if you had your kind of your Martian work camp going on after over generations, and you looked at the next year, the children that had actually survived long enough and thought, right, here are some useful variations that have arisen. We'll kind of edit those into the balance of the population and just sort of, and there's a really, really nasty eugenic situation, really, of just combining that the random natural evolution and then just sort of artificially imposing anything that looked advantageous.
Like human hives. Like beehives, not hives, disease, hives.
You're also going to get a different species just by natural selection, not so much selection, just random genetic drift. Yeah. Like if you have two human populations that don't meet and don't have sex in enough time, they're by definition two different species if they get to a point where they can't have children anymore. So just having human populations widely spread, you're going to get different species by definition after a while.
Yeah, and the vast distances in space will make it very hard to actually meet once you colonize different planets.
Yeah, and maybe impossible, because if you are changed, then you have to meet on some kind of common ground, and that might be hard.
Yeah,
social media.
Yeah,
I mean, the only other solution would be some kind of egg and sperm Tinder. So you like send eggs and sperms in shuttles between these colonies, and then you can sort of swipe and match if you want any of them.
Yeah, because that's another thing. Most of the colony
swipe sperm.
Just send it. Most of the colony concepts in many books are too small for real genetic variation. You need a lot of people to have enough of variation for generations to come. So probably they would need to send.
I think the ideal size for a Mars colony would be one, as long as it's Elon Musk.
Everybody's happy. He's happy, we're happy.
Yeah. But could you use genetic engineering to create variation?
Yeah, you probably could.
Yes, I mean, I suppose there's every locus on a gene has a finite number of, a very small number of potential what am I thinking of? Amino acids, or what are they?
The base, base pairs.
Base pairs. Thing. Yeah. And so, I mean, arguably, if you had very high technology and infinite time, you could make any individual human you wanted just by selecting locus by locus the precise genes you wanted to give them.
This is so. This is kind of going off in a tangent, but I read this really interesting research. So we actually have this problem today, not with humans, but with a lot of animals going through bottlenecks that are on the verge of extinction. And there's some interesting research now going in and looking at museum specimens. So looking at the genetics of animals that were captured in kills hundreds of years ago, or you know, a few hundred years, and just sort of mapping the variation that is exhibited in these collections, and see if you can start introducing some areas where it seems like there used to be a lot of variation, but we've lost it.
Yeah.
So possibly you could do something similar with human as well. You could sort of keep a record of what a human, a bigger human variation, and go in and sort of change specific areas where it seems that a big variation is more advantageous.
But the next thing you know, you have Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
And it's a lot of work, isn't it? All these things they have to keep track of.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of computer power.
And I suppose at the end of the day, you are pre-selecting for animals that are more likely to be shot by a Victorian explorer.
The slow ones, then.
Slightly naive and dumb ones. The ones that are attracted to flags and hats.
Dopey taxidermy animals, right?
Yeah.
But is it really just to fix one little gene? Isn't it several places that you need to make adjustments and they need to match each other? Is it so simple, really?
You probably have to change genes in the food that they eat as well. So, for example, if you want them to some enzyme or something, you need something to trigger that, or there may be minerals that are not in a normal human diet that you need to add to their diet. So it's an entire ecosystem you'd have to tweak.
And of course, it depends a lot on what you want to reach towards the end. So most other animals are able to produce their own vitamin C. Humans are kind of strange in the fact that we need to get vitamin C from our food. And, you know, making us being able to make our own vitamin C is probably quite easy, and it would make scurvy. Which, you know, scurvy actually might end up being a problem in space travel. And sort of solving that small issue might be easy, but doing something like adapting to a whole new climate, a whole new planet, would take a lot of different changes.
But rickets would also be an issue, wouldn't it? Because the only sunlight you're going to get will just completely frazzle you.
Yeah, so you want to make, you want to sort of up your vitamin D enhance production as well, and you know, some of those like tiny tweaks probably quite easy.
I mean, one option is, of course, it's not engineering us, but engineering things like our microbiome. So the idea, you know, if you want vitamin C, you don't necessarily have to have people that make their own vitamin C. You give us something in our gut that produces constructs vitamin C from other things that we're eating, and yeah, with any other vitamins or antitoxins or whatever you might need. I mean, it's an area of science that I've seen develop massively in the last few years, and I kind of feel there is a really interesting science fiction book waiting to be written, but focuses on an engineered microbiome and what you can potentially do with that. As far as space exploration is probably the most immediately attractive idea to write about for that.
Yeah. It would be irreversible, wouldn't it be? So the changes aren't permanent.
That would be like antibiotics to get rid of it and put a new one in there.
But what if it won't go?
I mean, and if you're engineering your gut flora, then you've got farts in space, which could be a problem.
I think that's going to be a problem anyway. I mean, that's
it already is, I heard. It already is a problem. Or whatever you put out there in the air on the International Space Station or whatever, it's there for good.
I was thinking about the ethical aspects. We talked a bit about it, but What other ethical aspects do we need to consider if we are thinking about enhancing humans?
I think one of the things that we tend to forget is if you want to do big genetic changes, then you have to do them to embryos, eggs or sperm or you know, first cell embryos. And whatever choice you make ends up being a choice that that person couldn't make themselves. And even if it's, you know, good things, even if it's positive things, it's going to be something that you make a choice for someone else who won't be able to make that choice. And I think that's a sort of a fundamental ethical issue. And I think that's an issue we're going to see quite soon in not even in space travel, but just in general.
It's illegal right now, right? Mm. You can't change embryos like that. And that's the basis of everything we discussed. We have to change that first. So are we ready to change our minds?
Well, I mean, yeah, it, like an awful lot of things, unfortunately, I can see there's a lot of potential good and a lot of potential progress you could get from this, but I absolutely feel that the point where someone is pushing for it, they will have the worst possible intentions. I can absolutely see an Elon Musk-style thing, wouldn't it be wonderful if, ... making that their new flagship thing alongside Tesla and Mars.
He could do it on Mars, right? Maybe that's his plan. He goes to Mars where our laws doesn't exist.
Is absolutely, I mean, again, in Bearhead, the whole point about these people being on Mars is that it's illegal on Earth, but yeah, no, you know, international law.
Go ahead.
Oh, but they've tried that on Earth, so there were a bunch of crypto dudes who bought a cruise liner, a decommissioned cruise liner, and decided to turn it into a seastead. And they said there'd be no laws, but you can't have dogs on board. And you can't make noises after 10 o'clock at night. And next thing you know, they had like a 100-page document full of laws. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then they ran out of money.
My heart bleeds.
That will be a time when we have, for instance, if I have a colony on asteroids or moon or Mars, and so that the law on Earth is not applicable there. So it's not far-fetched to think that entrepreneurs will move there to try to exploit things that are forbidden on Earth.
Mm. Definitely. And then I think your sort of vision of basically slave colonies is fairly...
And obviously, I mean, that's another thing, that the relationship between the asteroid belt and the inner worlds in The Expanse is another series that's really looked at that kind of inequality. And I think the attitudes in that series are very realistic.
Yeah, and it's an important thing that they can't go back.
No.
And these people we talk about, they can't go back. So we decided for them, like you said.
Yeah, and if you have taking embryos and change them so they can't live on Earth. They can't live on Earth, so they have no choice in the matter. I think that may be a problem.
But if you're going that far to actually engineer their bodies for it, you could also engineer their minds so they don't want to change back. They don't want to go live on Earth. To them, Mars is a paradise.
I think if you engineer their minds in that aspect, you also engineer away the drive, the curiosity, and the things that actually make us work as humans.
That's an interesting question, actually. Of what can you, what kind of, not looking at the physical characteristics, but at the mental characteristics, what things would you want to push for? So for example, I mean, one of the major issues of sending a colony to Mars is making sure everybody doesn't kill each other, which is a real issue, and there's been, you know, a lot of real research going into. So how do we make sure that people don't actually start to kill each other, even on the ship going there, because small amount of people confined space. And there has been some discussion of looking into, you know, can we increase... Humans are already extremely social. We can, you know, we are all sitting in here instead of killing each other, which is nice.
So far.
in many ways, which is, you know, it's strange because we don't know each other. We don't know, like, implicitly that we can trust. Like, I don't know whether I can trust anyone here, except for, you know, a few people that I know. But that sort of, would it be possible to increase that sense of accepting people, of of sort of trust, naivety almost? That would probably really be a really good trait to enhance. And then at what cost would that come? You would say perhaps you want more creative people because you want more problem solvers. Creativity specifically seems to be linked to some mental disorders in a genetic sense. So then you want to make sure that you don't have too much creativity, because then you're going to have a subset of the population that get different disorders instead. And finding that sort of balance is going to be really tricky.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, I think, just to echo something I was saying before, let's say you engineer or chemically dope or whatever your population to say, right, you now have much less of these particular hormones that cause aggressive behaviour. I can guarantee there's going to be still a top tier of people who do not have that treatment, because that means they can bully everyone else really effectively.
But that's where you need social engineering. So, I mean, who seriously thinks that a Mars colony with maybe 100 or 1,000 people, that capitalism is actually going to work? I mean, it'll be dead within 2 years. Everybody. It just doesn't work in a system like that. So you need some form of social engineering to come up with a political strategy that will sustain the colony.
Yeah, and the changes we talked about in our bodies are one thing, and I think it's exponentially much harder to engineer someone's mind, because that's all the other experiences and choices we make, if I'm allowed to think we have choice, but, you know, really hard.
Yeah, I think we also kind of underestimate how things are connected. I watched research, and I think it was primarily foxes and wolves, and they tried to breed them to be more tame. And it changed their how they looked. And other breeding programs, they bred how they looked, and it changed how they acted. So for, and I don't remember exactly what they were, but they wanted dots, and they grew aggressive, for instance.
I read somewhere that cheetahs in zoos are so high strung they have emotional support monkeys.
Yeah, I can imagine, and that also comes in the sense that it's easy to imagine. It's easy to imagine these genetic changes, and a lot of them will be possible. But a lot of things also will most likely be not able to change genetically because all of these interchanges. Yeah. So there's about 700 genes connected to length, and which means that each of these 700 genes are also doing perhaps 100 other things in the body as well. So if you tweak one of them, you might get slightly taller. We're talking half a centimeter, maybe. Mm-hmm. But you don't really know what else you're changing in, like, anything else in your body as well.
And a really interesting concept to be used in science fiction stories is, I think, the side effects of different genetic engineering.
Yeah, especially if you have someone like your slave colony who doesn't really care if people get cancer by the time they're 35, as long as they're strong or tall or grow quickly or whatever.
Yeah, and they have to eliminate cancer anyway because of radiation and the, you know, the atmosphere and whatever shielding you have. So cancer will also be, we haven't mentioned it, but we have to fix that as well.
Yeah, I think radiation is very high on the list of enhancements that we need to make, that we more resistance to radiation.
And also re-engineer us for different levels of gravity, because we evolved in a 1G field. I mean, they've had the astronauts on the ISS suffer from bone loss and a whole variety of things just from being up there for several months.
Yeah, but that seems very, very hard to fix.
No, actually, they kind of, if they exercise a whole lot, they are mostly okay when they come back, and keep exercising. So that's, this seems to be kind of solvable, and maybe with some extra enzymes and things, but it takes a lot of work.
Yeah, your workers wouldn't get much work done if they're spending like eight hours a day exercising.
Exactly.
I mean, you know what does very well in low gravity is very radiation resistant and never suffers from bone loss problems? Are spiders.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Well, if that was the case, we should all download ourselves into tardigrades.
Hey, I'm game.
Yes, but if we transform into spiders, we certainly will kill each other. Don't you think so?
I don't know. Exoskeleton is a good idea if you want to live in space.
Yeah.
Deal with gravity, radiation, all of it.
But don't spiders have trouble making webs in zero gravity?
No, they learn. They adapt, they adjust to zero gravity, and then they have to relearn to make webs under gravity. So their spider web making is way off topic here, but is they are very, very intelligent in the way they make webs. They adapt to the local conditions very well. It's not just automatic behavior.
Yeah. Interesting. Another tangent then. If we are going to enhance ourselves to be able to live in space and there are no vegetation or animals on the planet where we're trying to colonize, do we need to enhance animals from Earth and vegetation from Earth to be able to live on the new planet? Is that possible?
A lot easier. Mm-hmm. And absolutely necessary, I think.
They didn't genetically engineer the potatoes in The Martian, I don't think.
No.
No, but he was all alone, Elon Musk. No, but I think there's actually a really interesting project going on at NASA right now where they're trying to do like these bacterial kits for astronauts because you can't bring every type of raw material or every type of molecule to Mars because if nothing else because of weight. So they're looking into sort of stable self-generating systems of combinations of algae and either bacteria or yeast where you can go in and genetically edit the bacteria or yeast to get whatever molecule you want that day, anything from antibiotics to
like
insulin.
Like insulin, right?
Yeah, like insulin.
So do the same thing.
So it's like 3D printing.
Mm. Yeah, so like a biological 3D printing machine.
But then there's Aurora by Kim Stanley Robinson, where the Generation Starship goes to another world, and everybody who lands on it dies because there are prions that are lethal. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing they can do about it. So they just get back in their spaceship and go home. Oh, spoilers, sorry.
Yeah. You also have that, what's the name? It's the same author that's written Greybeard. It's written
Eldis.
Stargazer. Or so. Okay. I don't remember the name. But Brian Aldiss.
Yes.
Yeah, that's also a spoiler that the main characters, they are changed by something in the planet they arrived for. So they are actually not as humans anymore when they arrive at our Earth and doesn't recognize it at all. So that's also kind of the same.
I mean, there's ones from the 1970s where the only genetic engineering or body engineering for freefall is replacing your feet with hands. And I think it's going to be a little bit more involved than just that. You have to rewire parts of your brain, aren't you, to make your feet work like hands.
Although if your feet worked like hands from birth, I suspect those parts of your brain would do a lot of rewiring during the developmental phase.
I think the problem is going to be that you're going to have you can become a lot more dexterous in your feet already. It's just that some parts of your brain is going to do that instead of whatever they're doing now. So you might sort of have slightly reduced vision, or you might have a lot less of sensitivity on your back or something else that the brain deems less reasonable to use.
Yeah, and there are these people who are born without arms, for instance, and they learn to use their feet a lot. Hmm.
But if you were doing this for zero gravity, you'd need to re-engineer the joints to make them more useful as arms than a second pair of arms rather than just legs with hands on the
end. I think the knees are actually going to be a kind of a problem because you end up not being able to do to look like this motions.
Yeah.
Or you have just ice in your back stuck as well.
It's much more changes you need than you think about first. So before we go on to questions from the audience, do you have examples of books that actually deals with these concepts in a good way, apart from your own book, Adrian?
As soon as you asked that, every single example I was thinking of went out of my head.
Yeah. That's my punishment for getting the same questions from other moderators.
You mentioned Expanse series, and that's really, I mean, the kind of near future version, not too many changes. And then there's also Hail Mary by Andy Weir, which also kind of explores these questions. It's not a lot of changes, maybe, but the things we've talked about are in the storyline somehow.
It's been around for a few years now, and it's not really about space travel, but I still think that Oryx and Crake by Margaret Atwood is an absolute excellent book about sort of genetic changes and genetic engineering and things sort of going badly in very interesting ways. So even if it's not really about space, it sort of touches on a lot of these issues as well. I think it's really good.
Well, the seminal work would be Frederick Pohl's Man Plus, the man who is engineered to live on Mars. There was a film made using the same premise that a bunch of soldiers are genetically and surgically enhanced in order to live on Mars because Earth is dying, and then it turns into a slasher flick.
So there's a very... I have no idea how even available this is, but Dougal Dixon is very much the father of speculative evolution. He wrote a book called After Man about what might evolve on Earth from the handful of species we leave after humans finally exterminate themselves. But he also wrote a book called Man After Man, which starts off with artificially engineered humans for different conditions, including a vacuum-adapted human, extremely heavily engineered, sort of non-breeding sort of organism, but then goes on to the idea of, well, if human society collapsed and humans were just given millions of years a sort of wild, what we might turn into. And that's a fascinating sort of mental experiment.
Yeah, and I just realized also Scalzi, The Old Man's War, right? A lot of interesting changes there.
We could, of course, just sidestep it all and download ourselves and become post-humans.
Yeah. Schismatrix.
Yeah, and Diaspora by Greg Egan. Diaspora.
Yeah. Should we leave place for the audience to pose some questions?
Thank you. I think you were just about to start that, which is my question. It seems to me that being biological in space has a lot of in common with gravity. It sucks. So wouldn't it be easier just to upload and then make sure we have Westworld-like androids and just take over the entire galaxy?
I mean, one of the main problems with that is it may not actually be possible at all, which is obviously a bit of an issue. I mean, Lord knows I've written about it, and I like to think that it is possible, but there's an awful lot of us that is not here. I mean, frankly, there's an awful lot of us that is here, as one of the a lot of the microbiome work is discovering. A lot of what influences the people we are does not in any way come from our cerebellum. It's entirely possible, like a lot of science fiction concepts, that it is literally flat out impossible to upload yourself in any way that actually makes a you within the machine.
But that's the same issue we would have with making biological it wouldn't be humans anymore. So basically, what you're saying is humans would never leave.
Because you're dealing with you're still dealing with that biological system. You're dealing with a brain. It might not be quite the same, but you've still got an eye. Whereas in the machine, there might never be an eye. There might only ever be a string of numbers, a stimulation, a thing that has no actual consciousness.
And I think, also it's important to remember that the sort of main advantage of being a biological entity in space is the self-reparatory work that everything biological does, as you mentioned in the beginning. Being a machine in space would be a lot worse because nothing can repair you.
Yeah. Stick around, and I'll make sure you see what we can find.
But the worst thing, of course, is that you could be edited, and you would never know. You could be edited, you could be copied. probably notice if there are like a billion copies of a single person wandering around on Mars, but perhaps not if there's a billion copies in a couple of thousand different computers sitting somewhere on Mars.
And also, please visit the panel tomorrow about AI and how they will destroy us.
Cheery.
Okay, this is just a comment because you were talking about examples. And one good example of engineered or changed humans in space is, of course, 2312 by Kim Stanley Robinson. Where, for example, there are humans that are smaller, the short people who live in space and live much longer and are adapted to life in the space colonies.
I think it's a testament to how phenomenally influential Kim Stanley Robinson is that he could probably live quite comfortably if he got $10 every time we've mentioned his name so far at the convention.
So, any more questions, we'll have to take in the pause between panels inside. So, thank you for a very interesting question. And thank you for your audience.
Musiken av Psychedelic Pedestrian från Free Music Archive. Sök gärna vår hemsida på svekonpoddar.se.